It is the framework for strategies. Yeah. Is Marianne on yet?
I'm here. Hello?
Hi, Marianne.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. Turn your radio down if you have a radio on, hon.
I don't have a radio on.
Okay. And Marianne, I want, I just thank you for calling in, or we called you, I guess, but I really wanted to offer condolences to the loss of your 15-year-old nephew who died of Duchenne's muscular dystrophy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a very unexpected, yet not surprising death.
He died suddenly, though, didn't he?
He did. He died suddenly in his home on Friday, February 7th. As my sister describes it, he was alive and talking to her at 5:30. At 6 p.m., he was pronounced dead.
Yeah. And there is, and I'm so sorry, Marianne, I know that was hard on everybody, and it is, still is, and all of that, and I know we've talked about it, you know, before this call.
Yeah.
So, and you have, you are handicapped, you are hearing impaired?
Right, yeah, it's hearing loss in both ears, yeah.
And then, may I talk about your brother Joe? He has Duchenne muscular dystrophy as well.
Yes, he does.
And how old is he?
He is 56 years old.
And that is a miracle for muscular Duchenne. So I wanted
actually, I found out, for the record, there are only two people who live to the age of 70 with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And so far, as far as I know, there's only one other person that's in his 50s, other than my brother Joe. So this is very rare. It's an anomaly.
Yes. And so I wanted the audience to get sort of a snapshot of your situation. And then may I speak of the carrier situation?
The which situation?
Carrier. Carrier of the cell that produces that for women.
Oh,
who,
yes. Sorry.
Would you like to talk about that, or?
Speaking of hearing problems, I thought you said carrier at the talk. Sorry. Carrier.
Wow.
Yes. The way Duchenne muscular dystrophy works is that women are the carrier for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. This particular type affects only boys because it has to be with the XY chromosome. I don't fully understand the science behind it, but I know that that's why only boys get afflicted with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, yet women carry the for it, basically.
And how is that affecting your personal life, Marianne, if you feel for talking about that?
Sure. My husband and I had thought about having children. This was quite a few years ago, and around that time, my nephew Connor was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Up until that time, we were told that we did not carry it. For some reason, the science wasn't as advanced, and they thought that for some reason that we didn't have to, me and my, I have three sisters, and we were told that none of us had to worry about being a carrier. Well, that was wrong. Science has improved since then. But because my nephew was diagnosed with that, I became curious about whether or not I was a carrier.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we found out.
And it's
very tricky. Mm-hmm. It was not a straightforward just taking my blood. It was what was called a linkage test.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where they compare your sample with other people in the family. So they compared my sample with my father, with a healthy male, my brother Don, I believe, was his blood specimen, with Joe, the one who's affected with Duchenne, my brother who's affected with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. They also compared it with Connor, the one that passed away on Friday, February 7th, and my sister Kay and my mom. And what they were looking for was a particular marker.
Yeah.
For example, the healthy male, my brother does not have that marker. My dad does not have that gene marker.
Mm-hmm.
But Kay, the mother of Connor, my mom, my brother Joe and Connor all have that same marker, and I did too.
Okay.
So I discovered, and it's a real crapshoot. They don't know. I mean, I could have a healthy male. I could have a male with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Same thing with a daughter. I could have a daughter who is a carrier or a daughter who's not a carrier. So it's a real gamble.
How's that affected your personal life, Marianne?
Well, we decided not to have biological children, and we pursued the idea of adoption. But then, like many people with financial hardships that have affected most of us, we were not able to pursue the adoption.
Right, so now, what we're talking about is it affects you having a child. And then the economy affects you having a child. So that's where we're going to segue into the different the broken systems. So I thank you, Marianne, for coming on. It was wonderful to talk to you again, and I will see you soon, my friend. And thank you for enlightening people about that, and my condolences and best to your family.
Thank you very much.
Over the loss of your nephew. And I will see you soon. Thanks for, and have a good time teaching. Marianne teaches English as a second language for PCC, so you're going to work soon.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day, and good rest of the show.
Thank you, darling. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So there's a little information on an incredible hardship around just Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. And so, of course, we're continuing to look for a cure for that. But this segues into a couple of things that I want to talk about. Getting back again to policy, procedure, and mission statement, and I want to go right into why this is important for organizations, companies, people to stay true to their mission statement and to stay true to their policies and procedures. Why set them up if you can't stay true to them? Again, policy procedure, a set of policies, principles, rules, and guidelines formulated or adopted by an organization. And the bigger the organization, the more important it is to stay true to it, to reach its long-term goals and so on. Mission statement is a statement of the purpose of a company, an organization, or a person. In other words, its reason to exist. And I underlined reason on the paper I'm reading from. It shapes the goals, the path, the guides. It guides decision-making, and it is the framework for any strategy used. All right. Now, I want to go into something that happened, and this is a letter from TriMetLife. Now, I am 70. I have MS. I usually am in a scooter. I definitely, with help, come in here, for instance, not in a scooter, but in a walker. I have to have assistance to even get to this mic. Now, this is the letter I got from TriMetLife. Dear Grace Reed, the TriMetLife program has received your application. We need additional information in order to determine whether you are eligible under the ADA rules. Your application is incomplete or pending, and it's got a little check mark on incomplete. Did they cure MS and I just haven't heard about it, or should I go and get a cure in that way? I can get TriMetLife services, I opened this letter because they have a recertification program, I think, every year, and so I sent in my application and checked all the same boxes that I did a year after that, and it fully thought that I was going to get a letter saying, "Yay, you can now call TriMetLife and we will take you wherever you need to go," right? Instead, I got this letter. I have an incomplete application. I called them and I said, "Well, what's incomplete?" And they said, "We are unable to proceed with processing your request for TriMetLife services until you have completed the in-person interview or assessment." I called them and I asked them what that was about, and they said that they weren't sure I was handicapped enough to be on their TriMetLife services. Again, policy and procedure and mission statements. See where I'm going, people? The mission statement for TriMet Lift is basically, we are here to serve you. We are here to serve you. And I'm grateful for TriMet Lift. Thank you, TriMet Lift, for being even thinking about picking up handicapped people and schlepping them around from point A to point B. We're talking a lot of money. We're talking about a tremendous amount of money for the service you provide. So I'm not talking about a bunch of bad people. You know, people don't get up in the morning and go, TriMet people, policy procedure people, and TriMet Lift people don't get up in the morning and go, can't wait to make somebody's life more miserable, right? No, very few people do that in the world. So it isn't about that. And I'm not even griping about it. What I'm trying to say is what we have here is a lack of communication, a lack of following the mission statement of service, and the lack of the long-term goals. I don't know what happened over there. This is the first time, and I'm not the only one, obviously, that got this letter. And in fact, if anybody wants to call in on this, please do, because in fact, I've talked to several people that I know that have gotten this letter, and it's very punitive. There's a lot of busyness around getting on that bus, and what they said is basically, I'm just not handicapped enough to utilize their services. I don't drive, so what that means is that one more thing that's going to make my life more wonderful has disappeared until I can sort this out. So, hey, problem. Sorry, that's a problem. So, and then the other thing that happened, which is very interesting, is I live in an apartment building that's HAP, or they used to call it Housing Authority Portland. It's now called Home Forward, owned. It's the St. Francis, as a matter of fact. And they have a management company, and I won't say that because it's irrelevant. They have a management company that manages their portfolios and whatnot, and they train their managers to help us. So the mission statement of the management company is this: our mission is to serve first, is service first. We provide respectful and high value services to all we serve. A friendly, supportive team centered work environment which rewards hard work and excellence, and that's to their staff and to us who are utilizing their low-income, rent-adjusted apartments and whatnot. I'm Section 8. I have a one-bedroom apartment. I'm rent-adjusted. I'm with aging and disability. I have a certain amount of food coming in and so on, you know, the food help and all that. Well, that went down by $11, and my rent went up $50. I am on a very low income, and a $50 rent raise, not planned over time, not incremented, whatever. One more rent raise, and I'm homeless. I have no way to pay that. That really put me under. I'm already on the edge, and so a $50 rent raise from HAP and the management company, with the stroke of their pen, they put this person at your mic, at the KBOO mic, in a lot of problems. Then they tacked a very punitive letter on the door for inspections. And the letters they put on our doors are extremely conflicted. Okay, Stephen, what do you think about everything we've said so far?
Was that person on TriMet, what's his name, Thomas? First name and last name?
You know,
I'm doubting Thomas.
I guess I don't, the person on TriMet Lift, I got a letter from TriMet Lift Eligibility Coordinator. Yeah. So that's the letter I was referring to. Did you get one of those as well?
No. But when I heard you talk, the comment was from the Bible and about doubting Thomas, and I don't believe that Jesus was here. I must put my hand in his wound.
Well, what do you take TriMet Lift?
No, but I have clients who do, and I've had clients who do. And
okay. Well, did you put your application in?
No.
Okay. Well, when you do that, you know, you go down there and you put your application in, and it is a good service, but you may have to go through a little tap dancing to get on the buses, you know, their lifts. So thanks so much, hon, for calling in.
Okay.
But
thank you.
I really appreciate you calling in. Thanks. So, so you see where I'm going with this? I, as a 70-year-old handicapped, disabled, I don't even look at myself like that. I am not the MS. I don't even call it my MS. I just happen to have MS. I happen to be a 70-year-old person, getting more and more hairless and toothless as we speak. And what I'm saying is, oh my, do we need to train our managers? Do the management companies need to train their managers in nonviolent communication, just so punitive papers won't go on doors of already insecure people? The letter that went on our door was, we are coming with the Enterprise Community Asset Program, and we are going to inspect you. You have, and in big bold letters, which by the way is shouting on a piece of paper, the inspectors require us to post for possible entry to your apartment anytime between da 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 on Valentine's Day, February the 14th. So the choices. So on Valentine's Day, we got a plethora of suited people that came in and started, brought cameras in and started clicking inside our apartments. Click, 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 click. Brought a camera in and started clicking away. Hello? I didn't give anybody permission to come in and photograph the inside of my apartment. Anybody could come to my apartment and inspect it all day long. I'm great. But this is the kind of punitive, invasive stuff that's going on a regular basis from top level. HAP is an extension of HUD. So again, we need better policy and procedure changes at the government level. Well, that's a slow wheel, and I'll be dead before they even get around to anything like that. Home Forward, however, can do a little bit more better. I'm going over to City Hall. I'm going to be doing some nonviolent protesting around this. The management companies that they hire are also trying to do mission statements. For instance, I just read one. The mission statement is, our mission is to serve first. I don't think that's serving first when you come. I get a knock on the door. I open the door. Number one, you slam me with a $50 rent raise. And number two, you came in clicking like the Gestapo in the apartment building. Not okay. Sorry. Joanne, go for it.
Yeah, hello. I only been listening to your program for a couple minutes. But I just wonder, I don't know if that'd be helpful, Elders in Action and this other one, CAT, Community of Alliance of Tenants. Mm-hmm. I don't use the computer, but anyway, you know, I was going to say something about what I wanted help with. My daughter and her children were all disabled. I've been trying to get off and on for some years some help living, you know, in a house, a home. She's on Section 8, and I'm on public housing. That's been privatized. But I guess there's no real help anymore for anything like that, if there ever was. But I did my best, and thank you for the program.
Hey, thanks, hon. And you're right on with that. It's getting, and really, the only reason I'm telling my story is not for everybody to say, oh, poor Grace. It's not about that at all. It's about you. This happened to me, and it's happening to everybody in all of these subsidized housing. Home Forward has gone sideways, and their management companies have become very punitive, and they've gone sideways. And the only reason that I feel I'm just so grateful that I can come to this mic, thank you, KABU, and have a voice. And I know there's a lot of people out there that need a voice, and they don't have a voice, and they're afraid to come forward. So please call in, and don't be afraid to come forward and talk about this, because, in fact, you have rights. Stress, people that are under stress already with financial challenges, difficulties, mental health issues, addiction issues, handicap, disabled issues, age issues, etc., need to be secure and safe. Privacy is a big deal, for instance. Is it not? And the right to have a roof over your head. And, of course, that segues into the homeless situation. And many of us are just a hair from being homeless. So that's scary enough to get up every day. And one more rent raise, as I said, and I'm going to be there myself. I'm going to be scrambling to try to find some housing. It's scary. This is what we're doing here in Portland, Oregon. Portlandia, excuse me. In Portland, Oregon, for low-income people, this is not okay. None of this is okay. And again, I'm not saying there's a bunch of bad people getting up and going, can't wait to screw up Grace Reed's life, right? But what I am saying is there is more training needed. We need to get back into more policy procedure changes. There's a need for huge policy procedure changes and to stay true to the mission statement. And it's critical right now. So between TriMet Lift and housing and people that own buildings and whatnot. For instance, I live in an apartment that costs, that if it was on the open market, would be $1,000. So I'm living in an apartment that costs $1,000 for not even half of that. I'm not even paying half of that. So I get that if you own a big apartment building like the one I'm in, and it would be better to get a tenant in there with that could pay $1,000, right? But they have opened themselves, and thank you, HAP, HUD. Thank you, management company. Thank you, managers. Thank you, all of you, for even thinking about giving me subsidized housing. Thank you for giving me a food card, right? I'm grateful. But you know what? I'm also suggesting you need to not be so invasive. You need to get your policy procedure and your mission statements together and be true to them. And you need to start communicating one box to the other. And I'm going to try to help you do that. And that's my next summer, nonviolent communication protesting. Anyway, we have Laura Sandow. She's got a very important announcement, and enough of me and this. But I really appreciate the call-ins, and please think about calling in and talking about this.
Thank you. Thank you, Grace. Grace and I had a wonderful opportunity last week to see Project Grow, Port City Project Grow. Rachel Mulder showed us around and talked to us, and we're going to do a show with some of the artists that work at Project Grow. Project Grow has been developed to help mostly developmentally challenged people. They have many artists that work there, and they make some beautiful things. We were just very impressed with their setup, their equipment, the vibe of the place. It's the kind of thing that I think everybody should have access to. But it was just so good to know that these people had access to it, and it was inspiring, I think. So anyway, the next show, we're going to have some guests from Project Grow, and they're going to tell you a little bit about the program.
It was impressive. They have a huge art studio over there. Mm-hmm. It's a big operation. They get nicely funded, I think.
Yes, they do.
And they are developmentally disabled, and there were many, many of them, and they serve about 40 right now, and they have a staff of?
Eight.
So they need more staff. They need more staff. Thank you so much, and thank you, KABU, for giving me the opportunity to be at this mic, and I will see you next week, the fourth Monday of every month, 11 o'clock. Bye.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 24th annual Cascades Festival of African Films. Over 20 African films will be screened between January 31st and March 1st, 2014. Thursdays through Saturdays at Portland Community College, Cascade Campus, and Hollywood Theater. The films celebrate African achievements, expose Africa's failures, and reveal the possibilities for change and a more hopeful future. The majority of films were made by African directors, and show us pictures of Africa through the eyes of Africans rather than a vision of Africa that is packaged primarily for Western viewers. That's the 24th annual Cascade Festival of African Films at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus and Hollywood Theater from January 31st through March 1st, 2014. More information can be found at the right-hand side of KBOO.FM under Community Events.
Welcome to Radio Zine on KBOO. I'm your host today, Leanne Kranz. I'm joined in the studio by three faculty members from Mount Hood Community College in the Creative Writing English Department. They have collectively put together a brand new creative writing speaker series to, quote, bring innovative, thought-provoking authors, poets, filmmakers and scholars to campus for a series of interdisciplinary readings and discussions. I must say they've chosen a very impressive list of local and national authors for their debut season, including Pam Houston, Tom Spanbauer, and Willie Vlotten. They're also going to host an interdisciplinary mini-conference on writing sexualities with Kimberly Dark and Christopher Ryan later this spring. The next scheduled speaker is author Pam Houston, next Monday, March 3rd, noon to 1 p.m. in the Visual Arts Theater on the Gresham campus. This event is free and open to the public, and so is the parking. Here to tell us more are three faculty members from Mount Hood Community College: beloved local author Lydia Yuknovich, Michelle Hampton, and Andy Gurevich. Welcome, and thank you for being our guests.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to be here.
Good to see you. Good.
Lydia, when you first announced this speaker series on your social media site, you said it only took 12 years.
I did.
But with the help of your colleagues, it was finally coming into being.
Yeah.
Can you guys talk about your collective vision for this series?
Let me jump in first. This is Lydia. The collective vision came when Mount Hood had the genius presence of mind to hire Andy and Michelle, because what they brought with them was a kind of passion for the humanities and writing and the worth of art in someone's life. And up until they came to work there, I was trudging along with the other creative writers trying to make things happen, and it was like somebody injected life into the process when they came. So a day doesn't go by that I don't thank the cosmos that they showed up, because what it took was not repeatedly asking and asking, you know, the administration, could we please have a reading series, please? We have some peanuts and frogs. Could we please pay for it with this? It took people who were so passionate they wouldn't give up. And so Andy and Michelle are those people.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been at Mount Hood for about 10 years, but this is my first year as a full-time faculty. And I'm a person who came through an education in community college before I went on to a graduate degree. And so many times as a faculty member, they're watching the role of humanities in the lives of students to be transformative, help students find their own voice for the first time, and to put that down on paper and start to integrate sometimes very painful aspects of their own stories in empowering ways and back into the fabric of their own consciousness. It's a profound and really almost sacred experience. And I'm a person who really believes in this kind of social artistry aspect of the humanities, that to use it as a conduit for personal empowerment and social transformation, and to be a part of a group of people to be able to bring a level of access like this to the school. My wife Celeste, that our stories are the most important thing we have for each other and to share with each other. And that was my vision for the series, was to provide another conduit for students and then for the larger East County community, an avenue to see some people who are using the humanities to do exactly that.
And I'd like to add that Lydia is also a huge inspiration in keeping the arts alive and making everybody feel like their writing matters and their art matters and is life-changing. And so just her as a working writer and as a teacher, she's been a huge inspiration.
I hide from her in the hallways. I think she's the best writer in the country. Hey, hands down.
Yeah, she's definitely
and so
on the
humble.
Yeah, very refreshing. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah, so absolutely an inspiration to her colleagues and her students.
I understand, though, you are writers too.
Very superb writer.